Chapter 3. Suggestion, telepathy, and the grouping of beliefs. Ideas have an electromagnetic reality. Beliefs are strong ideas about the nature of reality. Ideas generate emotion. Like attracts like, so similar ideas group about each other and you accept those that fit in with your particular system of ideas. The ego attempts to maintain a clear point of focus, of stability, so that it can direct the light of the conscious mind with some precision and concentrate its focus in areas of actuality that seem permanent. As mentioned in Chapter 1, the ego, while a portion of the whole self, can be defined as a psychological structure composed of characteristics belonging to the personality as a whole, organized together to form a surface identity. Now, generally speaking, through the period of a lifetime, this allows for the easy emergence of many tendencies and abilities. It permits many more potentials to emerge than would otherwise be possible. If this were not the case, for example, your interests throughout life would not change. The ego, while appearing to be permanent, then, forever changes as it adapts to new characteristics from the whole self, asterisk and lets others recede. Otherwise it would not be responsive to the needs and desires of the entire personality. Because it is intimately connected with other portions of the self, it does not basically feel alienated or alone, but proudly acts as the director of the conscious mind's focus. It is an adjunct of the conscious mind in that respect. Basically, it understands its source and its nature. It is the portion of the mind, then, that looks out upon physical reality and surveys it in relation to those characteristics of which it is composed at any given time. It makes its judgments according to its own idea of itself. It is the most physically oriented portion of your inner self, but it is not, however, apart from your inner self. It sits on the windowsill, so to speak, between you and the exterior world. Voice stronger for emphasis, it can also look in both directions. It makes judgments about the nature of reality in relationship to its and your needs. It accepts or does not accept beliefs. It cannot shut out information from your conscious mind, however, but it can refuse to pay attention to it. This does not mean that the information becomes unconscious. It is simply thrown into a corner of your mind, unassimilated, and not organized into the parcel of beliefs upon which you are presently concentrating. It is there if you look for it. It is not invisible, nor do you have to know exactly what you are looking for, which of course would make the situation nearly impossible. All you have to do is decide to examine the contents of your conscious mind, realizing that it contains treasures that you have overlooked. Another way to do this is to recognize through examination that the physical effects you meet exist as data in your conscious mind, and the information that formerly seemed unavailable will be obvious. The seemingly invisible ideas that cause your difficulties have quite obvious visible physical effects, and these will lead you automatically to the conscious area in which the initiating beliefs or ideas reside. Once more, if you become aware of your own conscious thoughts, these themselves will give you clues, for they clearly speak your beliefs. If, for example, you have scarcely enough money on which to live, and you examine your thoughts, you may find yourself constantly thinking, "I can never pay this bill, I never have any luck, I'll always be poor." Or you will find yourself envying those who have more, degrading the value of money perhaps, and saying that those who have it are unhappy, or at best spiritually poor. When you find these thoughts in yourself, you may say, and rather indignantly, "But those things are all true. I am poor. I cannot meet my bills," and so forth. In so doing, you see, you accept your belief about reality as a characteristic of reality itself, and so the belief is transparent or invisible to you. But it causes your physical experience. You must change the belief. I will give you methods to allow you to do this. You may follow your thoughts in another area, and find yourself thinking that you are having difficulty because you are too sensitive. Finding the thought, you may say, "But it is true. I am. I react with such great emotion to small things." But that is a belief, and a limiting one. If you follow your thoughts further, you may find yourself thinking, "I am proud of my sensitivity. It sets me apart from the mob," or, "I am too good for this world." These are limiting beliefs. They will distort true reality, your own true reality. These are but a few samples of the ways in which your own quite conscious ideas may be invisible to you while being available all the time, and limiting your experience. Now, we have been speaking of the conscious mind, for it is the director of your activities physically. I told you, at the beginning of this chapter, that it was important to realize the ego's position as the most exterior portion of the inner self, not alienated but looking outward to physical reality. Using this analogy, portions of the self on the other side of the conscious mind constantly receive telepathic data. Remember, there are no divisions, so the terms used are simply to make the discussion easier. The ego tries to organize all material coming into the conscious mind for its purposes. The egos are those that have come to the surface at any given time in the self's overall encounter with physical reality. As I said, the ego cannot keep information out of the conscious mind, but it can refuse to focus directly upon it. The telepathic information, using our analogy, comes through deeper portions of the self. These parts have such an amazing capacity to receive that some organization is necessary to sift the data. Some is simply not important to you. It concerns people of whom you have no other knowledge. You are a sender and a receiver. Because ideas have an electromagnetic reality, beliefs, because of their intensity, radiate strongly. Due to the organizing structure of your own psychological nature, similar beliefs congregate, and you will readily accept those with which you already agree. Limiting ideas therefore predispose you to accept others of a similar nature. Exuberant ideas of freedom, spontaneity and joy automatically collect others of their kind also. There is a constant interplay between yourself and others in the exchange of ideas, both telepathically and on a conscious level. This interchange follows, again, your conscious beliefs. It is fashionable in some circles to believe that you react physically to telepathically received messages despite your conscious beliefs or ideas. This is not the case. You react only to those telepathic messages that fit in with your conscious ideas about yourself and your reality, emphatically. Let me add that the conscious mind is itself spontaneous. It enjoys playing with its own contents, so I am not here recommending a type of stern mental discipline in which you examine yourself at every moment. I am telling you about countering measures that you can take in areas in which you are not pleased with your experience. You will react, therefore, to all the information that you receive according to your conscious beliefs concerning the nature of reality. The deeper portions of the self do not have to take the ego's idea of time into consideration, so these portions of the self also deal with data that would ordinarily escape the ego's perception, perhaps until a certain point of ego time was reached. The ego, which must manipulate most directly with the everyday world, takes time, clock time, quite seriously. Even the ego, however, realizes to some extent that clock time is a convention, but it does not like such conventions broken. It will often neglect any clairvoyant or precognitive material that comes into the conscious mind from the deeper portions of the self. On occasion, when the ego recognizes that such data can be highly practical, it then becomes more liberal in its recognition of it, but only when such information fits in with its concepts of what is possible and not possible. Now the ego's concepts are your concepts, since it is a part of you. If you dwell on ideas of danger or potential disaster, if you think of the world mainly in terms of your physical survival and consider all those circumstances that may work against it, then you may find yourself suddenly aware of precognitive dreams that foretell incidents of accidents, earthquakes, robberies or murders. Your own idea of the perilous nature of existence becomes so strong that the ego allows this data to emerge, even though it is out of time, because your fearful beliefs convince it that you must be on guard. The incidents do not even have to involve you. From all the unconscious telepathic and clairvoyant data available, however, you will be aware of this particular grouping, and it will only serve to reinforce your idea that existence is above all perilous. If this information becomes available in the dream state, you may then say, "I am frightened of dreams. My bad dreams so often come true." So you try to inhibit memory of your dreams. Instead, you should examine your conscious beliefs, for they are so strong that they are causing you not only to focus upon calamity in the physical world, but to use your inner abilities to the same end. Telepathic communication is constant. This is usually at an unconscious level merely because your conscious mind is in a state of becoming. It cannot hold all of the information you possess. As an example, if your conscious ideas are relatively positive, you will react to telepathically received information of a similar nature, even if you do so on an unconscious level. As I mentioned earlier, in the 616th session, you are also sending your own telepathic thoughts outward. Others will react to those according to their own ideas of reality. A family can constantly reinforce its joy, laughter, gaiety, and spontaneity by concentrating on ideas of vitality, strength and creativity, or it can let half of its energy slip away deeper by reinforcing resentments, angers and thoughts of doubt and failure. Either way, the ideas of reality are reinforced both consciously and unconsciously, not only within the family but among all those with whom the family comes in contact. You get what you concentrate upon. There is no other main rule. It may be easy for you to see beliefs that are invisible to others in themselves. Reading this book, you may be able to point at friends or acquaintances and see clearly that their ideas are invisible beliefs which limit their experience, and yet be blind to your own invisible beliefs, which you take so readily as truth or characteristics of reality. Your sense data, again, will most definitely reinforce your ideas. You will also react clairvoyantly and telepathically to inner information at an unconscious level that is, once more, collected under the organization of your quite conscious concepts concerning existence in general, and your own in particular. So you are locked into physical situations that are corroborated by the great evidence of sense data, and of course it is convincing because it reflects so beautifully, so creatively, and so actively, your own ideas and beliefs, whether they are positive or negative. In greater terms, positive and negative have little meaning, for the physical experience is meant as a learning one. But if you are unhappy, then the word negative has a meaning. I expect that by now my readers have at least begun to examine their beliefs, and perhaps obtained a glimpse of some invisible ones that had been accepted before as definite aspects of reality. Now, if you are honest with your lists, you will finally come to what I call core beliefs, strong ideas about your own existence. Many other subsidiary beliefs, that earlier seemed separate from each other, should now appear quite clearly as being offshoots of core beliefs. They seem logical only in their relationship to a core idea. Once the core belief is understood to be a false one, the others will fall away. It is the core belief which is strong enough to so focus your perception that you perceive from the physical world only those events that correlate with it. It is also the strength of the core belief that draws up from the vast bank of inner knowledge only those events that seem to fit within its organization. Now let me give you a brief example of a core belief. It is a blanket belief. Human nature is inherently evil. This is a core belief. About it will spring events that only serve to reinforce it. Experiences, both personal and global, will come into the perception of a person who holds this belief that will only serve to deepen it further. From all the available physical data of newspapers, television, letters and private communication, he or she will concentrate only upon those issues that prove that point. Suspicion of others will grow, to say nothing about the individual's personal distrust. The belief will reach into the most intimate areas of his or her life, and finally no evidence will seem to be available to disprove it. This is a sample of an invisible core belief at its worst. A person holding it will not trust a mate, family, friends, colleagues, country, or the world in general. Another more personal core belief: my life is worthless. What I do is meaningless. Now, a person who holds such an idea will ordinarily not recognize it as an invisible belief. Instead, he or she may emotionally feel that life has no meaning, that individual action is meaningless, that death is annihilation, and connected to this will be a conglomeration of subsidiary beliefs that deeply affect the family involved, and all those with whom such a person comes in contact. In writing down your list of personal beliefs, therefore, leave nothing out. Examine the list as though it belonged to someone else. I did not want to imply that you make a list of specifically negative ideas. However, it is of supreme importance that you recognize the existence of joyful beliefs, and take into consideration those elements of your own experience with which you have had success. I want you to capture that feeling of accomplishment, and to translate it, or transfer it, to areas in which you have had difficulty. But you must remember that the ideas exist first and the experience physically follows. You make your own reality. I cannot say this too often. There will be periods where all of your beliefs are at an even par, so to speak. They will agree. The ideas may be quite limited. They may be false. They may be based upon premises that are not true. Their vitality and strength, however, will be quite real, and seem to bring excellent results. Wealth is everything. Now, this idea is far from a truth. The person who accepts it completely, though, will be wealthy and in excellent health, and everything will fit in quite well with his beliefs. Yet the idea is still a belief about reality, and so there will be invisible gulfs in his experience of which he is ignorant. On the outside, the situation will look most advantageous, and while the person seems quite content, beneath there will be the gnawing knowledge of incompletion. On the surface, there will be balance. So as your beliefs change, there will be alterations in your experience and behavior, and points of stress, creative stress, while you are learning. Our rich man just mentioned may suddenly realize that his belief is limiting, in that he concentrated upon it exclusively so that money and health became his sole aims. The shattered belief may leave him open to illness, which would seem like a negative experience. Yet through the illness he may be led to areas of perception he had earlier denied, and he may be enriched in that particular manner. The shifting of belief may then open him to question his other beliefs, and he realizes that in the area of wealth, for example, he did very well because of his beliefs, but in those others, perhaps deeper experiences opened by his illness, he learns that human experience includes dimensions of reality that had earlier been closed to him, and that these are also easily within his reach, and without the illness that originally brought them forth. A new conglomeration of beliefs might emerge. In the meantime, there was stress, but it was creative. Now here is another example. Your conscious thoughts regulate your health. The persistent idea of illness will make you ill. While you believe that you become ill because of viruses, infections or accidents, then you must go to doctors who operate within that system of belief. And because you believe in their cures, hopefully you will be relieved of your difficulty. Because you do not understand that your thoughts create illness, you will continue to undergo it. However, and new symptoms will appear. You will again return to the doctor. When you are in the process of changing beliefs, when you are beginning to realize that your thoughts and feelings cause illness, then for a while you may not know what to do. In the larger context, you realize that the doctor can at best give you temporary relief, yet you may not be completely convinced as yet of your own ability to change your thoughts, or you may be so cowed by their effectiveness that you are frightened. So there is a period of stress in between beliefs, so to speak, while you dispense with one set and are learning to use another. But here you become involved with one of the most meaningful aspects of the nature of personal reality, as you test your thoughts against what seems to be. There may be a time before you learn how to change your thoughts effectively, but you are engaged in a basic meaningful endeavor. The truth is then that you form your reality directly. You react consciously and unconsciously to your beliefs. You collect from the physical universe, and the interior one, data that seems to correlate with your beliefs. Believe, then, that you are a being unlimited by nature, born into flesh to materialize as best you can the great joy and spontaneity of your nature. Core beliefs are those about which you build your life. You are consciously aware of these, though often you do not focus your attention upon them. They become invisible, therefore, unless you become aware of the contents of your conscious mind. To become acquainted with your own ideas and beliefs, you must walk among them, symbolically speaking, without blinders. You must look through the structures that you have yourself created, the organized ideas upon which you have grouped your experience. To see clearly into your own mind, you must first of all unstructure your thoughts, follow them without judging them, without comparing them to the framework of your beliefs. Structured beliefs collect and hold your experience, packaging it, so to speak, and so when you look at a given experience that seems like another, you put it into the same structured package, often without examination. Such beliefs can hold surprises. When you lift up the cover of one, you may find that it has served to hide valuable information that did not belong there. An artificial grouping of ideas, like paper flower asterisk, can be collected about a standard core belief. The core belief, because of its intensity and because of your habits, will often tend to attract to itself others of a like nature. They will hang on. If you are not accustomed to examining your own mind, then you can allow separate growths of this kind to form about a belief until you cannot distinguish one from the other. This can develop to such an extent that all of your experience is seen only in relationship to this idea growth. Data that seems unrelated to this core belief is then not assimilated but thrown into the corners of your mind, unused, and you are denied the value of the information. Separate portions of your mind can contain such chambers of inactive material. This information will not be a part of the organized structure of your usual thoughts. Though the data is consciously available, you can be relatively blind to it. Usually, when you look into your conscious mind, you do so for a particular reason, to find some information. But if you have schooled yourself to believe that such data is not consciously available, then it will not occur to you to find it in your conscious mind. If furthermore your conscious data is strongly organized about a core belief, then this will automatically make you blind to experience that is not connected with it. A core belief is invisible only when you think of it as a fact of life, and not as a belief about life, only when you identify with it so completely that you automatically focus your perceptions along that specific line. For example, here is a seemingly very innocent core belief. I am a responsible parent. Now on the surface there is nothing wrong with that belief. If you hold to it and do not examine it, however, you may find that the word responsible is quite loaded, and collects other ideas that are equally unexamined by you. What is your idea of being responsible? According to your answer you can discover whether the core belief works to your advantage or not. If responsible means, I must be a parent 24 hours a day to the exclusion of everything else, then you may be in difficulty, for that core belief might prevent you from using other abilities that exist quite apart from your parenthood. You may begin to perceive all physical data through the eyes of that core belief alone. You will not look out upon physical reality with the wonder of a child anymore, or with the unstructured curiosity of an individual, but always through parental eyes. Thus you will close yourself off from much of physical experience. Now telepathically you will also attract unconscious data that fits into this rigid pattern, according to the strength and stubbornness of this idea and whether or not you are willing to deal with it. You may narrow our life still further, all information of any kind finally becoming relatively invisible to you unless it touches upon your parental reality. The core belief just given is of one kind. You hold some basic assumptions that are also core beliefs. To you they seem to be definitions. They are so a part of you that you take them for granted. Your idea of time is one. You may enjoy manipulating thoughts of time in your mind. You may find yourself thinking that time is basically different from your experience of it, but fundamentally you believe that you exist in the hours and the years, that the weeks come at you one at a time, that you are caught in the onrush of the seasons. Naturally, your physical experience reinforces this belief. You structure your perception, therefore, in terms of the lapses that seem to happen between events. This in itself forces you to concentrate your attention in one direction only, and discourages you from perceiving the events in your life in other fashions. You may occasionally employ the association of ideas, one thought leading easily to another. When you do this, you often perceive new insights. As the events fall apart from time continuity in your mind, they seem to take on fresh vitality. You have unstructured them, you see, from the usual organization. As you apprehend them through association, you come quite close to examining the contents of your mind in a free fashion. But if you drop the time concept and then view the conscious content of your mind through other core ideas, you are still structuring. I am not saying that you should never organize those contents. I am saying that you must become aware of your own structures. Build them up or tear them down, but do not allow yourself to become blind to the furniture of your own mind. You can stub your toe as easily on a misplaced idea as you can upon an old chair. It will help you, in fact, if you think of your own beliefs as furniture that can be rearranged, changed, renewed, completely discarded or replaced. Your ideas are yours. They should not control you. It is up to you to accept those that you choose to accept. Imagine yourself then rearranging this furniture. Images of particular pieces will come clearly to you. Ask yourself what ideas these pieces represent. See how well the tables fit together. Open up the drawers inside. There will be no mystery. You know what your own beliefs are. You will see the groupings, but it is up to you to look inside your own mind and to use the images in your own way. Throw out ideas that do not suit you. If you read this, find such an idea in yourself and then say, one cannot throw this idea away, then you must realize that your inner remark is in itself a belief. You can indeed throw the idea away, the second one, as easily as the first. You are not powerless before ideas. Using this analogy, you will certainly find some furniture that you did not expect. Do not simply look in the center of your inner room of consciousness, and make sure that you are on guard against the certain invisibility that was mentioned earlier in this chapter, where an idea, quite available, appears to be a part of reality instead. The structuring of beliefs is done in a highly characteristic yet individual manner, so you will find patterns that exist between various groupings, and one can lead you to another. The idea of being the responsible parent, for example, may lead quite easily to other psychic structures involving responsibility, so that data is accepted on its own value. You may even think that it is wrong to view any situation except through your parental status. The belief in guilt therefore would be a cementing structure that would hold together other similar core beliefs, and add to their strength. You must understand that these are not simply dead ideas, like debris, within your mind. They are psychic matter. In a sense, then they are alive. They group themselves like cells, protecting their own validity and identity. You feed them, figuratively speaking, with like ideas. When you examine one such belief, then you obviously threaten the integrity of the structure, and so there are ways of inserting new supports, so to speak, methods to tide you over. The whole core belief need not fall down upon you as you examine its basis. Imagination also plays an important part in your subjective life, as it gives mobility to your beliefs. It is one of the motivating agencies that helps transform your beliefs into physical experience. It is vital, therefore, that you understand the interrelationship between ideas and imagination. In order to dislodge unsuitable beliefs and establish new ones, you must learn to use your imagination to move concepts in and out of your mind. The proper use of imagination can then propel ideas in the directions you desire.